following podcast is brought to you by the Communications and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. This is DJ Velo. Welcome to Wandering the Seven, where each episode we dive into the real history, controversies, and cultural significance surrounding the seven wonders of the world. Hi there. Welcome to episode 3, where we will be discussing the third wonder of the world, being one of the most recognizable structures on Earth, the Colosseum of Rome. It's enormous, ancient, and awe-inspiring, but it's also a monument to some of the darkest corners of human entertainment. This is not just the story of bricks and blood, it's about empire, about spectacle, survival, and the fine line between this civilization and cruelty. By the end of this 14 minutes, you'll understand why the Colosseum became not only one of the new seven wonders of the world, but a mirror reflecting both the best and worst of what humans can build. Rome, 70 AD. The empire is vast, stretching from Britain to Egypt, from Spain to the edges of Persia. But beneath the marble and might, Rome is scarred. Emperor Nero, infamous for his vanity and violence, has left the city fractured and in flames. Then comes Vespasian, a soldier emperor with a simple vision: restore stability and win back the hearts of the Roman people. And how better to do that than with a gift, a building that belongs not to the rich, but to every Roman citizen. He drains Nero's private lake, part of the decadent Domus Aurea, and lays the foundation for something that will outlast the empire itself: the Amphitheatrum Flavium, what we now call the Colosseum. Imagine it. Tens of thousands of workers, engineers, stonemasons, slaves, and laborers, chiseling, stacking, and hauling massive blocks of travertine from quarries miles away. Some were paid, many were not. It's said that Jewish prisoners captured after the fall of Jerusalem were among them, forced to build the very symbol of Roman supremacy. The Colosseum rose in less than a decade, an engineering feat even modern architects admire. Over 15 meters tall, with seating for up to 80,000 people, it was the largest amphitheater ever built. The design was revolutionary, 4 stories high, built with concrete and stone, elliptical in shape to give every spectator a clear view. It had vomitoria, passageways that could empty the entire arena in minutes, and even an enormous retractable awning, operated by sailors from the Roman Navy, to shield the audiences from the sun. And below the arena floor, the Hypogeum, a labyrinth of tunnels, cages, pulleys, and elevators that could make wild animals or gladiators appear from beneath the ground like magic. Vespasian didn't live to see it completed. His son Titus inaugurated the Colosseum in 80 AD, with a festival that lasted 100 days. During that festival alone, ancient sources say that over 9,000 animals were killed. The Colosseum was more than a building. It was propaganda in stone, a symbol that said, "Rome endures. The people are entertained. The emperor provides." The Roman poet Juvenal once wrote, "The people long only for 2 things, bread and circuses." The Colosseum was the ultimate circus, but it wasn't just about entertainment. It was a tool of control. For the emperors, the games were a political weapon. They distracted the masses from corruption, poverty, and unrest. The people might go hungry, but as long as the shows kept coming, Rome stayed quiet. Let's picture a day at the games. The morning would begin with animal hunts, the venations. Exotic creatures from across the empire were brought to Rome. Lions from North Africa, elephants from India, crocodiles from the Nile. The Romans called them bestiae, and they were the embodiment of nature's chaos, something Rome believed it could tame. Trained hunters called bestiarii would face these animals in choreographed battles. Sometimes the beasts would fight each other. Other times, unarmed prisoners would be thrown to them for the crowd's amusement. By midday, the sun would be high and the crowd restless. That's when the executions began. Often brutal, theatrical, and designed to make a point. Criminals might be burned, crucified, or torn apart by animals in elaborate reenactments of myths. Condemned men playing the roles of tragic heroes, dying not on stage, but for real. Then, as the day cooled, came the main event, the gladiators. They weren't always slaves. Some were volunteers seeking fame or fortune, but most were prisoners of war, criminals, or the enslaved. They trained in specialized schools called ludi, where they were taught to fight and die with skill and spectacle. The audience had their favorites. Gladiators had fan clubs, graffiti dedicated to them, even endorsements. Women fainted at the sight of them. Poets wrote verses about their bravery, and yet their lives were brutally short. Most would never live long enough to retire. Scholars estimate that over the centuries, as many as 500,000 people and 1 million animals died within those walls. So here's the uncomfortable truth. The Colosseum's beauty, its grandeur, its engineering genius, was built on suffering. It raises a question that still echoes today. Why are humans so drawn to violence as entertainment? From gladiators to boxing rings, from bullfights to action movies, maybe the Colosseum isn't as distant from us as we'd like to think. When history becomes legend, truth often gets blurred. And the Colosseum is no exception. Let's start with one of the most enduring stories, Christian martyrdom. For centuries, people believed that early Christians were executed in the Colosseum, thrown to lions or burned alive for refusing to worship Roman gods. It's a powerful image, one immortalized in art and film, but historians have found little solid evidence that mass martyrdoms happened in this amphitheater specifically. Christians were persecuted, yes, but executions often took place elsewhere in Rome. Still, the idea of Colosseum as a place of Christian suffering became so deeply rooted that it changed how we see it today. The Catholic Church eventually consecrated the site, and every Good Friday, the Pope leads a torchlit procession around it, a ritual that transforms this ancient arena of death into a symbol of faith and remembrance. Now about those famous thumb gestures. Thumbs up for mercy, thumbs down for death. It's one of the most famous misconceptions about Roman culture. In reality, the gestures were more complex. Ancient sources suggest that a thumbs up might have signaled death, representing a drawn sword, while a hidden thumb might have meant mercy. Hollywood basically flipped it. And then there's the legend of naval battles, the Naumachia. Some accounts claim that the Colosseum was flooded and used to reenact sea battles, complete with ships and sailors. While ancient writers mention it, modern scholars debate whether it was physically possible before the Hypogeum was built. It might have been temporarily flooded or for small-scale performances, but once the underground chambers were added, it couldn't hold water. So maybe it had happened once, maybe never, but the myth itself shows that the Romans wanted the world to see them, capable of turning even the sea into a stage. The Colosseum is as much about imagination as it is about history. The stories we tell about it, the martyrs, the gestures, the sea battles, say as much about us as they do about Rome. For centuries, the Colosseum was the beating heart of Rome. Crowds roared, emperors watched, and the empire's might was on display for all to see. But as Rome's fortunes changed, so did the fate of its grandest monument. After the fall of the Western Roman Empire in the 5th century, the games came to an end. The empire could no longer afford the lavish spectacles that once defined its power. The arena that once hosted blood and glory felt silent. In centuries that followed, nature and neglect began to reclaim the Colosseum. Earthquakes struck in 847 and 1349, bringing down entire sections of the outer wall. We can still see the scars today, jagged edges and missing arches that remind us how time itself became the final conqueror of Rome's arena. But that wasn't the only damage. Much of the Colosseum's marble was stripped and reused. The once glittering facade that had dazzled crowds was dismantled, piece by piece. The stone found new homes in palaces, churches, even in St. Peter's Basilica. Rome's greatest amphitheater had become a quarry, yet it never fully disappeared from Roman life. During the Middle Ages, powerful families like the Frangipani turned parts of the Colosseum into a fortress. Its massive arches became defensive walls, its corridors filled with soldiers instead of spectators. Later, during the Renaissance, artists and scholars rediscovered the ruins. They saw in it a reminder of Rome's lost greatness. Poets like Petrarch and Byron wrote about it. Painters captured its melancholy grandeur. The sunlight filtering through broken arches, plants sprouting where emperors once sat. It became a symbol not of empire, but of endurance. By the 18th century, Christian pilgrims began to associate it with the blood of martyrs, real or imagined. The Catholic Church declared it a sacred site. A cross was erected in the arena, transforming it from a place of death into a place of reflection. And in the 19th century, something remarkable happened. The Colosseum began to be protected. For the first time in over 1,000 years, people stopped tearing it down and started preserving it. Archaeologists and architects worked to stabilize its crumbling walls. The Romantic movement in Europe fueled a fascination with ruins, and the Colosseum became the ultimate symbol of the fleeting nature of power. Napoleon admired it. Grand tour travelers visited it. Mark Twain wrote about its haunting beauty. By the time modern Italy was unified in 1870, the Colosseum had transformed once again from a ruin of an empire into a monument of a nation. And perhaps that's the most Roman thing of all, reinvention. The Colosseum had been an arena, a fortress, a quarry, a shrine, and now it stood as a relic of human resilience. But it wasn't done evolving yet. Today, the Colosseum stands in the middle of a bustling modern Rome, surrounded by traffic, cafes, and tourists from every corner of the globe. Each year, nearly 8 million visitors walk through its arches, craning their necks to look up at the towering walls, imagining what it must have been like when 80,000 Romans filled the stands. It's strange to think that a place once built for bloodshed has become one of the world's top destinations for family vacations and selfies. But it's also become something else, a stage for reflection. In recent decades, the Colosseum has taken on a powerful modern symbolism. Whenever a country abolishes the death penalty, or when a death sentence is commuted anywhere in the world, the Colosseum's lights shine golden at night. A beacon of compassion in a place once dedicated to death. It's hard not to see the irony or the poetry in that transformation. And yet, for all its beauty, the Colosseum faces new threats. Pollution, vibration from traffic, and the sheer weight of millions of footsteps wear away at its ancient stones. Cracks have appeared, and restoration teams work constantly to keep it standing. Modern Rome has a complicated relationship with its most famous ruin. On one hand, it's a priceless link to the past. On the other, it's a fragile monument in the middle of a modern city. Efforts to preserve it have become global. Engineers use 3D scanning and drones to monitor the structure. Archaeologists continue to excavate beneath the arena and revealing forgotten corridors and chambers where animals were caged and gladiators waited in darkness. Every new discovery deepens the story, and the more we learn, the more the Colosseum changes from a symbol of brutality to a symbol of understanding, of our shared human history, because the Colosseum doesn't just tell us about Rome, it tells us about us, about the things we value, the way we entertain ourselves, the lengths we'll go to build something that lasts, even if the reason behind it are flawed. In 2007, millions of people around the world voted in the new Seven Wonders of the World campaign, among them the Great Wall of China, Machu Picchu, and the Colosseum of Rome. And it's easy to see why. The Colosseum isn't just a ruin, it's a mirror. It reflects human ambition, cruelty, creativity, and endurance all at once. It's a place where contradictions collide, power and vulnerability, art and violence, glory and decay. It reminds us that civilizations rise, fall, and yet, through what they build, continue to speak across the centuries. For Rome, the Colosseum was propaganda, a symbol of imperial generosity and control. For the Renaissance, it was a muse, a source of artistic inspiration. For modern visitors, it's a marvel of engineering and memory. And for the world, it stands as proof that history is never truly gone. Thank you all for joining me today on episode 3. I hope you all enjoyed, and I look forward to seeing you next time when we talk about our 4th wonder of the world.